Hey, all you jive hustlers, you stone foxes, you mean dudes, watch out.
The Godfather of Harlem is doing it again.
There's only one stud who could rip off New York, ruin Rome, and stay alive to run a number in Africa.
Like stealing candy from a baby.
Super strong, supernatural, and
the baddest cat that ever walked the earth.
Damn, brother, you have become one violent dude.
I might not be the baddest man in the world, but I'm in the top two, and my father is getting old.
Pornography presented by Sam Sugar with the support of Fleshbot.
His business is pleasure. He sells the soft stuff.
Rated R. It's nasty.
Hi, I'm Sam Sugar. Welcome to Podnography Show 11. Podnography is a weekly look at the world of sex and pornography via news, reviews, and interviews. Along with our usual review of the past week at Fleshbot, this week's show includes a review of Fetish Flame, a podcast for the kinky, and an interview with a man, yes, a man, photographer extraordinaire Dave Naz. Each week, Fleshbot's Death Star seeks out and destroys bad sex Alderaan, making the universe safe for pornography's stormtroopers. Hang on, that makes me sound like a fascist. Fuck it, here's what Fleshbot linked to this week. Personally, I never bought the whole Janet Jackson's hot crap they tried to sell us in the 90s. She only looks normal if you look at her immediately after her brother. Aside from that, she was one of the worst examples of a black woman striving to look less black and then being rewarded with the whole hotness title thing. I'm not down with it. I like my Nubian princesses inky and real. How could people get excited about Jackson when Lisa Bonet was doing her natural thing with none of the self-hatred? Admittedly, Lisa Bonet likes heroin a lot more than Janet Jackson, but hey, no one's perfect. If you did fall into the ooh, Janet camp, footage appeared online this week, which gives us all a chance to look at her Super Bowl ads again, and for women, provides a fascinating insight into the aging process of the high-end boob job. For years, manufacturers have known that producing a custom guitar is as complicated as telling Manny he can finish the van later and pulling a few shots from Google Images. Continuing that proud tradition, you can now buy a Jackson Flying V guitar sporting Jenna's open mouth airbrushed where the pickups sit. My question is, if you smash one of these on stage, does that make you a misogynist? If you play it on TV, are Jenna's people gonna ask you for a cut? Is the varnish cum resistant? I'm probably overthinking this. Fleshbot reported on a new poll by Harris Interactive this week, which asked the public what should be done about pornography. Obviously, that kind of question's not at all judgmental, and the rest of the questions in the survey were equally misguided. For example, about half of all adults believe that pornography raises men's expectation of how women should look, 51%, and that it changes men's expectations of how women should behave, 48%. However, women are much more likely than men to believe these, 62% versus 40%, and 58% versus 37%, respectively. I don't get it. Women who are intimidated by female porn stars have got their priorities confused. Most porn stars are 5'4", average looking without their makeup, and as insecure as any average woman on the street. If I was a woman, and when I wasn't being complimented on my fabulous breasts, I'd think the people responsible for unreasonable expectations were on TV. Giselle, Natalie Portman, Jessica Alba, they all make most humans appear horribly deformed by comparison, and you have to look at them every time you switch on your TV. Granted, Jessica Alba probably doesn't deep-throat a penis without blinking, but think about it. Think about Jessica Alba deep-throating a penis without blinking. This week's weirdness comes courtesy of StatueMolesters.com. As an American site, the images people post of them feeling up cultural heroes, waxworks, and Ronald McDonald are mostly humorous. If it was a Japanese website, it'd have its own subculture and a special brothel in Tokyo where women pretend to be statues and you could do stuff to them while they stood there immobile with a stuffed pigeon on their head. Amazingly, by the time I finish this sentence, that club will actually exist. While blogs make the publishing cycles of magazines seem quaint, books continue to take longer to publish than they do to write. Thankfully, Fleshbot announced the publication of one of the few porn books actually written by someone who knows something about porn this week. Naked Ambition, by former porn publicist Carly Milne, has been in the works since just after the Crimean War, and is now finally available to read. Taking the form of interviews with and essays by women in the adult industry, it probably provides a truer look at what it means to be one of the women on which the industry's built than any amount of late-night socumentaries. That said, a socumentary version of Carly's book is almost certainly on its way. So they were my highlights from Fleshbot this week. For updates, check fleshbot.com daily. It'll make you very happy indeed. In this week's left-handed review, I'm going to take a look at a sex podcast, Fetish Flame. Normally when I review podcasts, there are masses of shows to listen to, which makes selecting the best bits a challenge for a 5-minute slot. This week I've no such problem. Fetish Flame has a Libsyn account, which makes downloading their show a 45-minute commitment, even on a fast connection. However, we'll allow them a little technical imperfection, because their concept is cool. A sexy couple talk about their fetishes, and explore those of other people. Obviously, this wouldn't work, and would be pure hype, if they defined fetish as a bit of spanking, or the occasional dressing up session. Thankfully, that's not the case.
Going straight to the strap-on may not be the best thing, because you need it's something you're going to have to work on a little bit and put some effort into and explore a little bit and understand how your body's going to react the first time you stick something in. And I have to tell you, the first mistake I ever made with a strap-on or with dildos and anal play was picking something that was too big. I didn't have anything small. And I just kind of like kept trying, and it was the most painful.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah. So, and it kind of turned me off for a while, and I stopped playing until I found toys, you know, that I could, you know, work with and then move up to, you know, something slightly bigger.
Right. And they always say start with fingers. And, you know, ladies, if you're starting with your guy, I highly recommend stimulating him while you're giving him a blowjob. Because I've had guys tell me that the best orgasms they've had was all of a sudden, you know, they're getting a blowjob and their prostate gland is all of a sudden tickled and they just explode.
Let's talk about that, because that's you need to understand why it is so great for a guy, is that that prostate gland is
basically your G-spot.
Yeah, and it's really it's super close to the wall there, and the woman has just kind of an incredible amount of access from that point, right. Woman, dildo,
and define
whatever.
The prostate and the G-spot, and we won't go too far into it. Basically, whichever partner, male or female, is on their back, you slide a finger or two into the opening, and you give a come hither kind of, wiggle your fingers as if you're saying come here. And that's the best way to get to both the G-spot and the prostate gland.
Right.
And of course, once you find it, it's fun to have toys and explore and see what else hits and what different angles. And God, I feel like there's so much more we have ahead of us to talk about. I hope we don't run out of time.
Or if you've got a strap on in you right now and you're thinking, big deal, impress me, sugar, try this.
Actually, I want to talk about some of the logistics. Like, what are some of the, like, if I went to buy panties for myself, Like, what would I have to do? Like,
where would Atticus go to find panties to fit that ass? Walk into
Victoria's Secrets and get a pair of panties and a bra? Is that possible?
You can. And in fact, Victoria's Secret, the one at San Francisco Center, I've talked to them. I'm pretty sure they recognize me at this point and
buying extra, extra large.
Oh. But
you sent
I go in with.
Oh, you go in with.
Yeah. I go in with clients and we go shopping. And sometimes it's as girlfriends and sometimes it's as mistress and submissive. And different things happen.
Which sometimes it's very. I'm sure they just kind of.
Well, it's in actually.
In another part of the country, it might be a little different,
listeners,
right?
Listeners in Atlanta are going, there's no way in hell I could go to Victoria's Secret.
Well, and even so, there's some people that just don't want to go to Victoria's Secret in San Francisco. The ladies at Victoria's Secret, if you do go in to be fitted for a bra or panties, will fit you. If they're not comfortable, they will get somebody who is comfortable. But I've not had any problem.
Interesting.
That's great. So have you brought Sandra or Cindy into Victoria's Secrets or both?
Oh, both.
And they've both been fitted? And they had something to fit both of them?
Cindy has not been fitted. That kind of humiliation is just not Cindy's thing. We've gone in and gone shopping together, just as girlfriends. Sandra has definitely been fitted. She's a 38B, I believe.
As you can probably tell, even if you don't share the fetishes discussed, there's something really interesting about the byways of other people's sexual proclivities. Unless you're a lot bolder than I am after a couple of drinks, fetish flame's the easiest way to get a close look at some exotic sexual practices without being ejaculated on.
You first saw him in Enter the Dragon. Now see him as he's never been seen before. Jim Kelly is Black Belt Jones. See him train his own army of girl high jumpers to help penetrate the hideaway of one of the mob's biggest bosses. See him retrieve 25 grand from the mob's own vault, guarded by the toughest hoods in the underworld. See Black Belt Jones join forces with a super chick who's a smash at karate and really means business. Jim Kelly, international karate champ, and Gloria Hendry are a super team in Black Belt Jones from Warner Brothers Rated R, under 17, not admitted without parent. When you're hit by Black Belt Jones, it's a smash hit.
Having a beautiful woman undress in front of you is an honor. Being able to take pictures and ask her to spread it a little is the stuff dreams are made of. One guy who's managed to make a living from erotic photography and help define a look which has shaken up what people expect of porn is Dave Naz. I caught up with him by phone earlier this week.
Hello, Dave.
Hey.
Well, thank you for taking time to talk to me and the listeners today. You have the honor of being the first male interviewee on the Podnography Show.
All right.
You will be the first person who I'm not accused of flirting with outrageously, I believe.
We'll see. Yeah. By the time we get to do it.
Okay. Well, you know, if you feel it going in that direction, just let me know and I can rein it in.
I'll call the authorities.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm a long way away right now, so they'll have difficulty coming to get me. Although, if you were to call the local Latvian authorities, they'd probably just come around and beat the crap out of me because they're not particularly diplomatic.
I'm in LA, so same thing.
Yeah, we should do a cop exchange. They'd like that. So, for people who aren't familiar with your work, give us a rundown of Dave Naz and what your position is within the industry.
Well, I shoot for a number of magazines, including Leg World, Barely Legal, Tight, and what else do I shoot for? Finally Legal, and you know, just a number of other ones. But I also have a few books out. The first one being Lust Circus on Goliath, Panties on Goliath, and Legs on Goliath. And Legs is the current one.
Excellent. And is that's in stores now, right?
Yep. And on my website, there's links to, you know, Amazon where you can buy it.
So for people who have only seen one aspect of your work, I'm sure there are people who've seen your work in magazines but not seen your books, and there are almost certainly people who've come at you from the other angle. How would you describe your aesthetic and what you do?
I like to kind of bring out the natural look. Spend a lot of time telling the makeup artist, if there is one, you know, to shoot. I don't even always have one, but when I do, I try and get them to make the girl look real natural and not like paint a new face on her, but to kind of bring out what she has. And I feel like a lot of people paint a new coat on, and it's a totally different person. You can, you know, barely recognize the model that walked in the door. And I try to kind of just enhance the person that walks in the door by bringing out their natural look. And so that's what I go for. If I can get that, and as far as expressions go, I kind of like a blank expression or just a natural expression, but I don't like the phony, you know, the poses that some girls just kind of naturally do, because that's what all the photographers ask them to do.
The contortion with the boobs and the bum in the same shot, and the kind of looking over the shoulder thing.
Yeah, and keep in mind, like, there's a lot of great photographers that I totally respect their work. And I mean, if you go to my house, I mean, it's all photography on the wall for the most part, and none of it's mine. So, like, I'm a big fan of photography, but I'm very specific in what I like and what I don't like.
Who would you say are the photographers that you look up to and respect, particularly if there are any within the kind of adult or stroke nude field?
In the adult industry, well, Richard Kern is definitely right up there, and he also is one of the main reasons I'm shooting for the adult industry, because he got me started when I was assisting him. So I've always been a fan of his work and his movies. And I really like Ed Fox's work, and he's a friend of mine too. And he definitely like has a unique look about his photographs. And who else is there? I guess in the adult field, those are the top two. But there's other ones too. But I just like, I'm kind of blank on them at the moment. But it's not just like they're the only two, but they're the only two that stand out right at the moment. But beyond the adult industry, like Larry Clark, Nan Golden, and who's my other one? Diane Arbus are the top three photographers that I completely look up to. And although they're doing a different style, I completely respect their work, and they pretty much inspired me to do what I'm doing.
Do you feel any limitation as a photographer being involved in the adult industry? Do you feel as if that any doors are closed to you now because you've entered, you know, the world of smut, so to speak?
They probably are, but I haven't really tried to open those doors, so I haven't encountered it too much. I mean, I'm sure, if I was trying to shoot fashion right now and people knew that I worked in the adult industry, they wouldn't want to hire me. But I haven't really pursued that, so I haven't really encountered it. And I'm really happy doing what I'm doing. So at the moment, I'm happy.
And regarding the kind of state of the adult photography market, how do you rate it? Do you think it's a vibrant area? And what do you think of the quality of the work that's being done in general?
With our government right now and all the restrictions they're imposing, it's getting really difficult, and it's definitely not as lucrative as it was like 10 years ago. And I've only been doing it for about four years now. And it's gotten worse in that amount of time. But there is still a market for it. And, thankfully, I got in when I did, but But yeah, I certainly wouldn't want to be starting right now, because it's just not, it's an uphill battle. Even when it comes to what you're able to shoot, you know, what I, even some of the things that were published maybe, or being published now, won't be published in the next 6 months because of the new 2257 ruling, and just, you know, Americans not being able to shoot foreign models, and just certain poses they're not allowing now because everyone's kind of worried about getting sued.
Well, that's something actually I haven't heard about directly. What kind of poses are problematic at this point?
You know, if it were like in, let's say if it were in Taboo or something, you really have to be careful of, you know, the girl not looking too submissive, although that's the kind of magazine it is. That's what you're trying to, you know, you're trying to shoot a certain fetish, but at the same time, you don't want the model to look like she's in danger or anything like that. Because that's when, you know, people start complaining, I guess. I don't know who these people that read these magazines start complaining are, but they are out there.
Calling their senator because they picked up because they picked up a copy of Taboo, and then they're horrified to find that there are explicit pictures of people being tied up and, you know, spanked in it.
God forbid.
And actually, that's probably something that people are curious to know. When those kind of shoots are going on, how real is it from the perspective of people seeing what's going on? I mean, are people actually tied up, or are you leaving them loose? And how much acting is going on in order to make those expressions? And I mean, do you use makeup to redden people's supposedly spanked cheeks? How does that stuff work out?
I don't use makeup. I know other people do, but I can usually see it. I can usually tell when it's makeup. I mean, to get a butt red, you don't have to spank it very much. I just rather do it for real, you know. And I mean, it goes away in, you know, 10 minutes or something. As far as being bound, no, they're bound pretty tight. But at the same time, I'm really careful with the. I only use one rigger when I'm shooting for Taboo or Bonded. I use two riggers actually when I'm shooting my own stuff too. But I'm really careful about the people I work with, and they're so good. I mean, they can just get the rope off them in a second, you know, and they're fine. But I've never encountered a problem. And actually, some of the girls I've shot had never been tied up before, and you found to enjoy it. And I believe they probably have it in their personal life now. They're more open to it.
You're providing a social service in that respect.
Yeah, I know.
It's interesting to hear it from you, because I know a number of models kind of have made, you know, being fetish models their niche. And in the same way that I know a couple of models who are gay but who pretend to be straight for the purpose of their job, I also know people who, you know, claim to be submissive or dominant and aren't really, as well as people who genuinely are. It's interesting to hear from a photographer how those differences go down. I mean, do you ever find yourself shooting someone for Taboo who you're trying to make look submissive, who just won't go for it and you have to accommodate in other ways?
Doesn't happen that much, but sometimes when someone naturally isn't submissive and that's pretty common. If someone's just, you know, not used to it and doesn't really know the expressions, if they look somewhat uncomfortable, that works too, you know, for that look, because that's kind of what you're going for, really.
Yeah.
Know, or at least what I'm going for, and not to have just a really fake look on their face. Like, I just like it to look almost, I'd rather have it look blank than too posed.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's something that you always get from looking at your work, is how natural, you know, you how naturally you put everything together, so it doesn't look like it's completely set up and cheesy. Is that something that's always been part of your work, or something that you grew into?
It's it's something I like from working with Richard that I saw how, you know, he would get the girls to pose, and I just thought, yeah, that's, you know, he does it in a very kind of disarming, calm way. You know, he's kind of easygoing, and I've seen other photographers that yell and scream and don't get the same results, and I'm more of a kind of calm, easygoing guy, so I think kind of putting the model at ease is the first step, and making them feel good about themselves rather than you know, ridiculing them and telling them they need to fix this and fix that. And you know, there's a lot of photographers out there that are very cruel, and I don't work that way.
That the cruelty thing in your experience isn't a myth. Then there are the photographers out there.
It's, you know what, I'm not going to mention any names, but it's always the, like, kind of the older guy photographers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying all of them, but there's a couple I can think of that I always hear the same stories where they make them all cry and this and that. It just pisses me off.
Do you find that that's a reason for models getting out of the industry? Having difficulties with photographers.
It doesn't help, I'm sure. I mean, the more bad experiences you have, the less you're going to want to do it, and the more comfortable with the people you work with, the more you're going to want to do it, I think. And you know what? Back to like the kind of taboo type photography. I have to say, like. Fresh Fetish, the photographer that goes under that name gets amazing expressions as far as like what I like, very natural and very real, and you know, anyway.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting to know. I think, you know, I'm someone who sees quite a lot of adult material for obvious reasons, purely research, of course.
Oh yeah.
And you know, I'm as kinky as the next pervert, but I do admit that there are certain things that worry me even to look at, because if I don't know the backstory, it can be very difficult to gauge what's going on. You know, I know enough models that I've heard a couple of horror stories about working with particular individuals. Where people have told me that they've been coerced into doing things, or you know, pressured into doing things that they didn't want to do, and for me that completely changes the tone of the material. You know, I can feel comfortable looking at someone being, you know, tied up and spanked if in the back of my mind I'm thinking that's what they want to happen, and they're having a good day and they leave with a smile on their face. Whereas if I think that those pictures are being produced under duress, then it becomes, you know, the document of something really horrible. So it's really interesting to know about different attitudes, and I think that's one of the reasons that there is such a strong reaction against some of that kind of fetish photography.
Yeah, like I said, it's always the same names I hear, and it's, yeah, never good experiences.
Is there anything that you wouldn't shoot?
I mean, besides the obvious.
Within the realms of legality, I also get, thank you, and thanks to my wonderful audience, there are a few people who email me. They just seem to email me like the sickest stuff they can find, and when I say sick, I'm probably being judgmental, but the kind of most extreme material they can find. There's one guy who sends me such frightening emails, I don't even look at the links. You know, he takes great pleasure in saying, you know, I hope you haven't eaten, and then there'll be a link to some German website, and I'm not being anti-German, it's just a lot of these websites are from Germany, and I just think, I can't even look at that. I'm not even going to attempt to look at that. But there's also, you know, beyond the kind of super bizarre, super nasty stuff, I mean, one of the things that I've seen quite a lot of recently is water bondage, which to me looks really, you know, really edgy, because there's a kind of obvious danger. Within the realms of possibility, is there anything that you think is kind of too far, or are you game for anything?
I'm game for most. I mean, shooting scat, like you said, is not something that I'm really interested in doing. But on the other hand, I would say that I think it's erotic to shoot, like, if I would shoot, like, video of someone getting an enema or something like that. I think that's, you know, there's something erotic about that. But, you know, as far as the poo coming out part, it's like, kind of avoid that. But
you know, and I didn't even say poo, but as soon as I said Germany, you knew exactly what I was talking about.
That's synonymous.
Yeah.
And as far as the water bondage, the girls I've known that have done it are really into it. That's not something for novices to do, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so, but I've never shot it, and I've never actually even seen, I've seen photos and things of it, but I've never been there when it's been done. But it is interesting. It looks amazing. But like I said, it's, you know, someone's going to be doing that, it's really going to have to be into it, because it is dangerous. I mean, you're usually breathing through tubes, and you know, if you're tied and you're breathing through tubes and you panic, then I mean, anything can happen.
Yeah, so I mean, I can't look at that stuff without comparing it to being on a movie set, you know. And I've been around people doing stunts on movie sets, and the insane amount of preparation for stuff that you'd think is fairly simple. You know, like someone's going to fall down three stairs and they've got all this gear on underneath, and, you know,
right,
there are four coordinators going around checking things and replacing, you know, metal railing with a piece of balsa wood and stuff. And you think, you know, I could do it in that time. So when you see these contraptions, it's astounding to me how how brave some of these people are.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, I mean, some people just building up to that point have done a lot and just want to keep going to the next level, and that's where they end up sometimes.
So you mentioned that you've been shooting nudes, or you'd been shooting adult for about 4 years, right?
Yeah, I guess. God, when did I start shooting nudes? Probably like 2000, I think. Or maybe, yeah, 99 or 2000.
And how long were you shooting before that?
I started shooting in like 95, so I mean, I haven't really been shooting that long.
But it took you a long time to get, well, it took you 5 years before you shot your first nudes.
I don't even really know exactly, but that was, like, I guess that was when I started shooting and the stuff started getting published, I guess. So I was shooting some here and there, but like the stuff I started shooting in like 2000 or 99, that's when that stuff's been published. And before that, it was like, it's not good enough to be published.
is there an archive of Dave Naz material that should never see the light of day?
There's definitely some crappy stuff, but it's interesting to look back at some of it, because when you're not as aware of certain things, it, like, the photo definitely looks different. Sometimes I think some of the early stuff I've done looks better, just because I wasn't paying attention to obvious things and I was paying attention to, you know, other details maybe.
Give an example. What kind of details do you mean?
Just like if I was shooting in a room and I wasn't really paying that much attention to the light, and I wasn't, you know, I was just using the room light or something, and it just, like, the light hit the person right, but I wasn't really, maybe when I took the shot, I was paying more attention to the fact that the girl was pissing in the toilet, you know what I mean? You know, there's one shot in mind from Les Circus, where this, you know, I hadn't done much photography, and I just, there was this girl, and she, just shooting her, like, peeing in the toilet, and I wasn't really paying much attention to anything else other than that she was paying, but I liked the shot a lot, and I don't think I could get that same shot now to look that way, just because I'd pay attention to other things and have to light it myself. You know what I mean? Like, it's just different.
Was that shot planned? And when you say you shot her peeing in the toilet, was she on the toilet, or can you actually see that she's peeing?
Yeah, she's, like, standing up over the toilet and lifting up her, like, little skirt.
well, they're the kind of women that I was gonna say kind of guys. They're the kind of women that I normally end up dating. Women who pee standing up.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah, tough women. That's what I like. Nice, strong women. But so was that something that you planned? Did you have kind of like lots of water on hand, or was that an opportunity you took?
No, I mean, now I plan it. Now it's like, keep drinking, and, you know, until they're ready, until their bladders are about to burst, and then it was just like more spontaneous.
That is funny.
Everything's more spontaneous when you're starting out.
yeah. But I do understand what you're saying, actually, because I think it applies to a lot of fields where your limitations can be strengths, even if you don't realize at the time. You know, and when you don't have those limitations, you can kind of be at a loss because you're not forced into doing things anymore. And sometimes what you're forced into ends up being the interesting stuff. So in the 4 years that you've been shooting nudes, has your kind of aesthetic, your idea of what's beautiful changed at all?
No, I mean, I work on different series, but as far as what I think is beautiful, it hasn't really changed. I just try and, but I have changed like my lighting and things like that, just to try and make it so it doesn't look all the same.
Is there competition? Are you, when you say that you've changed your you know, when you've changed your lighting, is that in response to what other photographers are doing? Are you trying to stay ahead? Or is it a purely personal thing?
I just think, like, I never went to school for photography or lighting, so I just keep doing things that I think make my photos look better. I mean, when I shot the panty book, like, most of it's just, like, the umbrella is just, like, aimed right at the girl, and now I'm kind of, you know, just kind of switching it up a bit. God, I can't even, offhand, I can't really think of exactly. Maybe like the legs book is a little more moody than the, some of it is a little more moody than the panty book, for example. And the panty book's like really stripped down, and like the legs book is kind of, I don't know, it's like I've got these, you know, $200, you know, pantyhose on this girl, and I purposely like put no makeup on her. So, you know what I mean? I'll do like little things like that to make it look just different.
And what, I mean, that's your books have gloriously simple names. You've got Lust Circus, Panties, and Legs, right?
Yeah.
What's the, aside from the obvious, and maybe that's all there is, but you tell me. But aside from the obvious, what is the difference between the three books?
All three books are completely different. I mean, the Lust Circus is almost like a fetish fashion type book. The photos are really vibrant. Like I would, everything shot on negative film, and I pushed it all. I like, you know, pushed the film to make the colors really vibrant. The panty book, when I did that, when I started doing that, I went, okay, I want to do something totally different. So I, you know, pretty much there's very little makeup or no makeup. And just panties, and the colors are way more neutral, and just they're not pushed at all. They're just, you know, some of them are slide film, and some of them are neg film. But I just, hey, they're not vibrant at all. And then the legs book is more, God. Well, the legs book, a lot of it is stuff I've shot for Leg World and Leg Show, and but then I threw some different things in there, like I said, with the models with no makeup, for example, and just to kind of mix it up a little bit.
And if someone wanted to get a kind of a digest of your work, which book would you recommend they pick up first?
I think the legs book's the best. The panty book has sold the most, but it's also been out longer, so I think a lot of people like it, but I would say the legs book is the best of all of them. That's the one I'm most proud of.
And earlier when you were talking, you were saying that you wouldn't like to be getting into the nude photography market today. Why is that?
there is a lot of competition, and I mean, I'd still want to be doing it, but it would just be getting into magazines and things like that would be a lot more difficult just because of the competition.
What would your advice be if someone who's listening wants to get into photographing nudes?
Oh yeah, just go for it. But if you're trying, it's just once you start trying to sell your photos, that's when it becomes, you know, it's like anything. I mean, if you want to be, it's just depending on your what you want to do in life. I mean, if you the more money you want to make, depending on what bracket you want to be in, mm-hmm. it's the harder you're going to have to do, you know, to work at it. And the same goes for photography, and you know, because everyone's fighting for it.
I know a couple of photographers who are, you know, kind of big name photographers within the adult world who make the vast majority of their income at this point from the internet. Is that something that's true for you? And if not, do you see it getting more that way as time goes by?
I don't know. That's even a tougher market. I had a pay website for a little while, and I actually don't make any money from the internet, really, because I don't even have a pay site up at the moment.
Dave, we need to talk.
Well, I had one up, and then this person just completely dropped the ball. But so I'm not really in any rush. But I know like Suze and like Peter Hegger.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm pronouncing his name wrong, but I definitely have a lot of respect for them. I mean, they got into it and they just really kind of cornered the market, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Suze's website is a big operation. And I don't know, Peter's a photographer I haven't met, although I've admired his work.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of his work too. He's really got that look down. I mean.
Yeah. It's, in fact, actually, in the adult space, he's probably the photographer who is closest in kind of style to the kind of stuff that you're doing. Because you both also, I mean, I think the other thing that's impossible not to think when people see your work, and I've also thought it looking at Peter Hegre or Heger's work or whatever he's called, is that you both seem to have access to the most beautiful models. And I think actually one of the reasons that your work's interesting to me is because you shoot a lot of women that I know. One of the reasons that his work is interesting to me is because he shoots these women that I've never met, but are all kind of, you know, spectacular looking.
Yeah, they're all natural and they're all beauties. Yeah.
He has an eye. Who's your favorite model to work with?
Oh God, that's a tough one. There's so many that I've become friends with that I work with. I mean, I love Aria. She's just unreal. She's so just easygoing and fun to work with. And Jelena Jensen is, and God, Belladonna is like, I think probably she's definitely one of my favorites. I mean, she's just so into it, you know.
Have you shot her since she's had her baby?
I shot her a few times. Actually, there's the current Taboo has a layout I did, and there's a layout coming out in Leg World that I shot of her, where she's like eating waffles with her feet, and it's pretty fun.
While she's pregnant, or afterwards?
No, but the Taboo shoot, she was lactating, and I had her all tied up, and the milk was just pouring out of her boobs.
There are people who are running to the store right now just hearing that.
It came out nice. Yeah, I really like the way that turned out.
You should do another book, Milky. It might take you a while to build up back catalog there.
That would take a while. Yeah. Only shot like a couple lactating moms.
It would be huge though. If anyone is lactating who's listening, just go to Nez's website and there will be a book. I'll just expect my normal 40%. It'll be perfectly
fine. Yeah, I'll give you permission.
There are also, I mean, I also hear from a lot of women who are interested in getting into the modeling side of things. What would your advice be for them?
You know, I think getting into it, you got to start out somewhat slow and do some still work, or if you're comfortable with video, do that, and then just kind of don't just jump right into the 50 guy gangbang. That's fine to get into that, but you're better off as far as making money too, just starting off with magazine work and then slowly going into video work and then just doing what you're comfortable with, and rather than jumping right into it. I see a lot of girls that just jump right into the most hardcore scenes, and that's fine. I have no problem with it, but I think it's better to start off slow, and it doesn't mean you can't do what you want, but don't just jump right into the most hardcore videos. A lot of agents will push that because it's the most lucrative, but it doesn't mean you can't be doing it a month from when you start, but get your feet wet first, so to speak.
You're absolutely right, and I can say that from models that I've known, actually, although jumping into the hardest stuff is most lucrative immediately, long term, the models who retain control of what they do end up doing better, because there's this kind of unknown area, even if they allow themselves over time to kind of go drip, drip, drip. But one of the reasons, look at someone like Janine. For years and years she didn't work with men, and then when she started working with men, it was a huge deal, and still, people put out press releases every time she kind of crosses one of these barriers that a lot of women cross the first week they're in the industry. Because of that, they kind of allow themselves to be in demand, whereas on the flip side, if you do everything right at the very beginning, you people will actually say to you in the industry, well, you did it for them, why won't you do it for me? And you can lose opportunities because you push that bar, and that's what's expected of you rather than something that you're going to choose to do. Whereas there are models who, although to be fair, they tend to be the models who have a look that people really desire, but who can make very good livings doing really pretty soft core work for years and years.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. There's girls that I work with that started off hard, and now they do soft work, and even when I shot them, if they don't want to do something, I'm thinking, in the back of my mind, I'm like, hold on a minute, let me just backtrack in my mind and think of that video you were in,
Yeah.
But, I totally respect what people are, willing to do at that time, but at the same time, it is better to go in the other to start off soft and then, get into what you're going to get into.
Yeah, and then the other question about models, I actually got an email earlier today from someone who had read my blog, and it was the standard modeling question I get, which is, I want to be in Playboy. Do I have a chance? And as I say to everyone, send me a couple of pictures and I'll give you an honest opinion. And there are a couple of people that I know who have got people into Playboy, not because they're magic, but because they're ex-playmates and they have relationships. And when they come across someone who's right, Playboy isn't hesitant about saying yes. And, 9 times out of 10, the people who email me and say they want to be in Playboy, however lovely they are, don't have the look that Playboy want, being kind of blonde and all-American and of a particular weight. I got an email today from someone who, she was a lovely looking woman, but by Playboy standards, she was 30 pounds overweight. By guys in the street standards, she was gorgeous, but it wouldn't have worked that way. That was a really long-winded way of saying that, even for someone like me, there's a way of kind of, there are certain judgments you can make about very, very specific aesthetics, say whether someone is liable to be a potential Playboy model or could be a possible fashion model. But if someone just wants to be involved in nude modeling in the adult industry, how can they know whether they have what it takes?
I mean, usually, I know with... you know, with Hustler, or if you go to even if you go to my website, it lists like what I'm looking for, and for the magazines that I shoot for, like what I need, and it'll say like the age, like the girl's got to be natural and all this, and then, you know, once you go down the list, if you feel like you fit into that into one of those categories, you know, email me a couple photos, and you know, it's as easy as that. Like, I'll book the girl right away if she fits.
So what's on your list, Dave? Because I mean, you take great pictures.
I should bring that list up and look. No, it's like for Barely Legal, the girls have to be natural, between 18 and 20, you know, they just really have to look young. I mean, that's what sells. For those magazines, is just a real fresh look. So, you know, if they've, you know, if the girl's been doing a lot of drugs over the years, she's not going to look as young. Or she's been, you know, sitting out in the sun and smoking and all that. I mean, you know, a lot of it's genetics too. But, you know, some girls look real hard just because of the way they treat themselves.
Yeah. And what about, you mentioned natural. What about tattoos and piercings and that kind of stuff?
Well, the tattoos, if there's not a lot of them, they're pretty easy to take off, and you know, once they go to pre-press. But piercings have to come out for the most part. Like if there's nipple rings, they have to come out. There's just no way around that. And also, any rings around the pussy or anything like that have to come out. And if they can't, I just really can't shoot them.
It's interesting. I'm sure there are lots of people who didn't know about these intricacies. And also, as a photographer, do you have a pubic hair policy? Because I know a couple of photographers do.
You know what? I like it. I think it looks better in photos. It adds like texture to the photos. And I'm so bored of looking at like shaved pussies. You know, I mean, I'd rather see more hair. You know, just than a completely shaved. You know what I mean? Like, I think it looks kind of cool.
I think it's going to come back. I actually heard, maybe everyone knows this, but I heard a really interesting argument or a really interesting theory for the whole kind of shaved pussy thing. Because I'm guessing we're probably near enough the same age. We're both extremely young, Dave, extremely high achievers. But, you know, back in the 50s and the 40s, before pornography was legal and kind of pre Playboy and even early Playboy, the law said that everything had to be airbrushed out. So everyone looked shaved, even though they weren't showing explicit shots. And I heard someone saying, you know, there was a whole generation of guys who grew up on this supposedly very tame material, but it had the effect of making women look as if they didn't have any pubic hair. And then it was, you know, and so by the time they reached adulthood, or by the time, you know, porn came along and it was serving that generation, that was the aesthetic they went for, you know, which I'd never really thought about before. Because pubic hair has only been visible for a really brief period of time, you know, from kind of, I think the first model with pubic hair appeared in Playboy in like 1970-something. And now it's all gone away again. for some bizarre reason, you know, that even when I was a kid, you know, and in the kind of, you know, the first time I saw adult magazines, I must have been kind of the mid to late 80s, you know, when I was really pretty young. But even then, compared to today, those models were gorillas. and I don't completely understand it. I mean, I don't have a shaving fetish, but do you have any idea where that's come from? And is that something that's requested for particular, you know, for work?
Yeah, it's actually, I mean, for the people I shoot for, they like pubic hair. I think because they see so many people without it, they get requests from readers that want to see it. So when I have sets with girls with pubic hair, they're, you know, they're an easier sell.
So if anyone is thinking of getting that waxing done, maybe you should hold off. Although, speaking of Peter Hegarty, did you see he posted a piece of video not so long ago of one of his models being waxed? And it's interesting because it's not really shot to be, you know, it's not some kind of super close-up sexiness. It just makes you think, wow, if my girlfriend or my date is doing that for me, thank you very much. Because she just looks, I mean, she looks just like, you know, just as most guys know women to be, as in tougher than us. Because when I was watching it, I was thinking, they would have. Have you seen the 40-year-old virgin?
I saw the clip on Jay Leno.
That's exactly how guys would be. I mean, and that was his chest. But this poor girl. I mean, she's having it. You know, she's having the full Brazilian, and it goes on. He basically cuts between every time a strip is taken off, and you think, wow, this is taking a long time. And then, you know, once she's had about 20 hits, she has to kind of flip over and, you know, do the back door as well. And you just look at it thinking, that has got to sting. You know, has really got to sting.
I mean, it's funny. Like, I remember when I was growing up, there was magazines called, like, Tender Shavers, or, like, there's a lot of magazines, because there weren't a lot of shaved pussies then, but now it's like those magazines are like just gone because every magazine the girls are shaved.
Yeah, I mean there used to be in England there was a magazine called Shaven Asians. I remember, you know, it was like a crazy niche, and in England an Asian is someone from the Indian subcontinent as opposed to someone from Pacific Rim. But it was considered really weird. And I can also put my hand up and say that the first time I saw a woman with no, you know, an adult woman with no pubic hair, I found it quite surprising, actually. I mean, as a kid, I remember it wasn't kind of an obvious fetish to me at all. But maybe this is all getting a bit too personal at this stage and I should just save it for therapy. So
isn't this therapy in a sense?
Yeah, you're right. Actually, I feel a lot better. You should be charging me by the hour. So, what are you working on now?
I've got a new book in the works. It's a Lolita book. I think it's going to be called Lolita's Redux.
Nice.
And it's on Goliath. It's a thick book. It's like 300 and some pages.
Wow.
It's, you know, got some familiar faces and some new faces, but all, you know, with that girls like smoking and just kind of being naughty. It's a fun book. I'm happy with it so far, although it's just taken a lot of time to scan all these photos.
And when do you think it will be available?
Probably by next summer.
Nice.
In Europe, it'll be out before, but in the U.S., probably not till like summertime, I would think.
Why the lead time in Europe?
Because it's a German publisher, so it comes out there first, and then, of course, with our laws, it gets shipped over here, which takes forever, and then it's on a boat for a few weeks to make sure it doesn't explode, and then our distributors get it, and then they sit on it for God knows how long, and then it finally hits the stores.
And then 6 months after that, you get a tiny check.
my publisher is very good, I must say, and I'm really lucky to be with them, with Goliath.
I have a copy of Lust Circus myself, and you know it's a beautifully put together book.
Thanks.
Well, it's all right. What can I say? I'm a fan. Well, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us today. I will, if people are looking for you online, where should they be looking?
DaveNaz.com. It's a free website, and I kind of change up the photos and have a little blog on there. I try and keep it so people want to come back and keep checking it out and see what's going on.
And it's a good blog, as I have visited it myself on many occasions, and well worth checking in. Well, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time, and let's talk again then when your next book is about to hit the streets.
Look forward to it.
that's it for Podnography Show 11. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check out podnography.com for past shows, fleshbot.com for daily sex news, and sugarbank.com for more of me. My name's Sam Sugar, and that was Podnography.